This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
What we're going to do now is a focus on municipalities and whether or not we can make our municipalities profitable. Is it even possible? Is that even a concept for that matter? Is it possible to have municipalities that are profitable? So we'll be in conversation with Mielani Holeni, who is a group chief advisor for revenue at Nkiso Consulting Group. We'll also be speaking to Kevin Allen from the Municipal IQ about the state of our municipalities and how do we get our municipalities to a level of profitability, which is something that Mielani is proposing. We'd love to hear from you as well on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. Mielani, good morning and welcome to Power.
Good morning, Aldrin, and good morning to the listeners.
Is that really a concept?
Well, I think in government terms, we talk of surpluses that must be generated from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a concept. In fact, it's a reality that municipalities should be able to enjoy year on year, because running as a business, you cannot run consistently on deficits, or you cannot run consistently on being bailed out. So it's something which we believe that the model for local government needs to be relooked at. If you look at the local government white paper that was released as way back as 1998 to give birth to municipalities, a lot has changed. And I think there's maturity in the system. But there also has been some confusion, which has caused the local government to lose some of its gains that it would have gained, at least experienced by now. So it is possible, and we need to look at, you know, where the key areas are where we can make a difference for municipalities.
Mm-hmm. And what are those key areas?
Well, the key areas is that if you look at the fact that local government is there running as a business and servicing local communities, it's where most people, when they talk about government, they tend to understand that is where government is. If you talk about national or provincial, yes, it is government, but government for people who are down on the ground where they pay their rates or they pay their accounts or they book halls or the roads, the streets, you know, street lights and the refuse and so on. That is where things are happening. So there's a enterprise that is municipalities are enterprising activities that they are carrying out. One of the key areas that we must resolve, which is a big issue currently, if you look at the lack of cooperation currently between Eskom as well as the municipalities, where in one sense Eskom is a supplier of electricity, on the other side they are also to the municipalities, and on the other side they supply directly to the consumers. That tends to eat away from municipalities part of the revenue that they should be generating to be able to pay Eskom and remain sustainable. And electricity is one of those big line items or revenue generators for a municipality, and tends to cross-subsidize all other services within the municipalities. If you think of indigents, if you think of refuse, streetlights, and all of those things that have non-funded mandates. So in that sense, there has to be cooperation and between the entities, especially of government, so that as they even approach the private sector, which is willing to come in, there's clarity of roles, there's clarity of policy, and there's space for everyone to be able to contribute so that they can supply services at the point where they can generate surpluses. So that is one of the ways, and that speaks to how you administrate the municipalities. It speaks to how you get the skills that must be on board. If you think about the distribution business of Eskom, it's full of well-qualified engineers, highly experienced and so on, and they are servicing consumers or at a consumer level. So if you juxtapose that with municipalities, they are struggling to fill the positions of technical managers, of electrical engineers or civil engineers and so on. Yet you have quite a good crop of people sitting at Eskom, especially at the distribution side of things. Leave the generation, leave the transmission, but look at the distribution side, which is consumer facing. So there could be a better collaboration between the two, where one does not have to owe the other.
Yeah, but isn't it a case that we should actually start rethinking municipalities and the role that municipalities play in service delivery? Because most of the emphasis is more on national and what happens at a national level, whereas national, from where I'm sitting at least, national is more about the policy intervention, and where the service delivery happens right at the municipality. Even the departments of national, those buildings are at a municipal level. Those buildings are situated in a metro. They're situating in a municipality. So rethinking and how we understand municipalities. The other day, we're having a conversation on Power Talk, and I was saying that even when it comes to the deployment of cadres, or the political deployment of people who go into these positions, whether it is as part of the executive or as part of the administrative staff, rethinking that and saying that actually our most capable people must actually be on the ground.
Absolutely. I think you're touching on a very important point of capability. And in simple terms, capability is leadership, it's strategy, and service delivery. So if you look at various people who are having to go and contend with working at local government, some of them are new entrants into the government space, having come directly from their political persuasions or political parties. And each year or each 5 years, there has to be a reintroduction, a reorientation, and various things where people are instead looking at, you know, how do we get our way into the legislature? How do we get our way into the national or provincial legislatures or assemblies so that we can at least, you know, further our careers there? So the rethinking is precisely that. How do you build capability at a local government level so that the leadership that is there is one that is highly experienced, has the knowledge, has the skills, highly educated, and are able to carry the agenda of local government? So if you also juxtapose that with the provincial, you have Coxter in Gauteng, yeah, and all the other provinces where you're sitting with very capable bureaucrats as well.
Yeah.
And those capable bureaucrats are able to contribute to a wider debate, understand things, can understand systems thinking, can understand a whole lot of things that can be of greater benefit, as opposed to being a monitoring and evaluation type function sitting at a province or sitting at a national. That we need to get those bureaucrats to get their hands dirty. If you look at the corporate services, the legal side, you know, so there are things that where municipalities, especially the smaller ones, if you take away the cities, the locals as well as the district, where they are struggling with very critical things which could be done or completed by various bureaucrats that are sitting either at provincial government or at national government. And I also will add the issue of Eskom as well. You have engineers who are sitting there as well. So there's a wider pool of skills of which local government unfortunately gets starved of those skills and ends up being unstable, ends up being left to fend for themselves. The second part to it is that if you look at how the fiscus is also divvied up between the three spheres of government, local government enjoys, or at least not even enjoys, but gets only 8.8% of the allocation, whereas the lion's share goes to the province, it goes to national. And at national, what do you have? You have, as I've said, capable bureaucrats, but the bulk of that is salaries that are being paid from there. You don't have programs that are rolled out, which you can point to the fact that they impact the local people within there. There are policies that are being done, great work. We need all of that. But how do you then blend the skills of the local government practitioners with the rest of the spheres of government? Because in essence, when government fails, it's not just looking at local government and saying, you know, this arm of government is failing. It's a failure of government if we're not able to deliver services, if we're not able to bring about programs and catalyze the economy.
Isn't one of the biggest problems also with the party political system that we have, and how, for instance, in a party system, you'd have a Moses Kotane region, for instance, and that is considered as a region in the hierarchy of the party structures that is much lower. It's considered to be much lower than being, for instance, in the NEC of the ANC or the top six of the ANC. So what then happens is that the political party then uses that particular structure and take a carbon copy of it and applies it even to governance, when it comes to governance, where you'd find that somebody who is the regional chairperson, for instance, of the Moses Kotane region, is then eligible to become the mayor or the MMC of something, that person would not necessarily be deployed all the way up at national. The same way where somebody is deployed up at national, NEC level, is elected to be part of the top 86 members of the ANC, but that person is not then appointed or considered to be a possible mayoral candidate for the party at a lower level.
It's a interesting way, the way that the political parties are obviously approaching whether you call it deployment or the allocation of the various party members. But we must focus on the administration.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand the political system. There is a political system which is legislated all the way up to national, and local government has got its own dynamics. There is council, mm-hmm. there are councillors, there are ward councillors, there are PR councillors, and all of that. But the point I think we must emphasize is the skills of the officials that are at the administrators or carrying out various functions. You cannot substitute a civil engineer for something else. You cannot substitute an attorney for something else. Mm-hmm. You cannot substitute. So I think we must look at the core of what is it that gets a municipality going. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's the political side which provides the oversight.
But isn't that the first point of call? That because if we go through an election, then the electorate decides that they want to have the Democratic Alliance to run a certain municipality. The Democratic Alliance has its own way of going about governance. So you first need to fix what happens in political parties and how political parties understand governance and even governance at a local government level.
So to take MFM, Municipal Finance Management Act, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Take the Municipal Systems Act, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a shortage of the governance or the guidelines of how to run municipalities, how to run council, how to run all of those things. Of course, you know, the point I mentioned earlier is that it gets difficult if you find always every 5 years there's churn of capable leaders who perhaps, you know, look for opportunities elsewhere, and you have to get a new crop that, you know, you orientate. By the time you get to 2.5 years, when they are starting to grasp, you know, all of this, maybe there's an urge, you know, to start, you know, moving various people. So those are the dynamics that we must be able to look at from a local government point of view. The fact that our council is constituted, that is very clear. The fact, you know, of how you must set up your mayoral committee, that is clear. How the budget must be done, clear. So the issue here is that, do you have people to put together a credible budget? Do you have people who are able to go and source the revenue for the municipality?
Mm.
Do you have people who are going to come up with a long-term plan to be able to plan for roads, bridges, waterways? Do you have people who can deal with water leaks? So it gets down to that point, you know. So the other side to it, there's clarity to it. However, as we are saying, let's make sure that there's consistency of, you know, people who are practitioners in the local government space, and they can move through the various ranks. And that is possible because we've seen a number of people who have come in as councillors who have now broadened their skills within the local government space. They become MMCs for whatever portfolios, and they end up being executive mayors. And that tends to help because there's continuity within the system.
Mm.
But the point of what we must also focus on is the core mandate of a municipality as a business. It requires a diversified set of skills, of which if you have vacancies, you'll battle. If you don't have the right skills or experienced, you'll battle. So for me is that the key things that we must look at is on the service delivery side. And three key things. Refuse, if it's collected, you know, you have at least, you know, comfort. If there's water that comes out of the tap, there's comfort. Electricity, we're in a different boat. I don't want to even talk too much about electricity because we've accepted load shedding for whatever reason, and it's starting to help that we municipalities can diversify suppliers of electricity. But the other part to it is you cannot tinker with revenue.
Yep.
Revenue is one of the key things that must be generated, and sources must be found, and money must be banked, because that's what you drive and how you drive a municipality.
Mielan, I'm still going to argue with you that you need to get the political party right, I believe. And the political party needs to understand what is needed when it comes to governance. Because you look at the Central Politburo of the Communist Party of China. and the role that it plays in terms of oversight. And that for me is what's lacking with our political parties. It's almost like somebody's deployed, a party wins an election, people are deployed, but what oversight mechanisms are there in the party to ensure that whatever was in the manifesto that was promised to the people is actually delivered, and it's not the sole responsibility of the administrators only, but those people who are deployed to those positions only are also holding them accountable and making sure that those programs are implemented.
Absolutely. I think the issue of accountability is a key one. And I'm by no means taking away the fact that there must be accountability. There must be someone who holds also the officials to deliver the programs. But I think the other point which perhaps you are suggesting is, who polices the policemen in terms of, you know, the various leaders who are there? So think of the provincial structures, which are supposed to be there supporting municipalities. Look at the national structures as well in terms of COCTA. So there should be a golden thread. Where we are finding a disconnect is the lack of collaboration between all of these spheres. I think that's what we must cut down, you know, to how do you collaborate, you know, and get all the role players within there. There's also as well, if I may just, you know, sidestep a little bit, there's also the traditional leadership, you know, system that must also play a role in terms of, you know, oversight. In some of the municipalities, it's not coming to the party, and you find some of the municipalities are rural municipalities where the land sits with the royal authorities which are there. And if there's no collaboration between all the spheres, you may find that the development of that particular municipality is also hamstrung. Land cannot be promulgated so that you unlock the development of whether it's residential, whether it's industry, and so on. So I think the core thing about it is, in as much as there is accountability, there's also collaboration that you must be drilling down to.
I thought the Department of Cooperative Governance was actually supposed to play that particular role. And when we were preparing for this interview last week, I was saying to the team, Nuku was arguing, but no, there's already the district model that COCTA is going about. And I'm like, but isn't COCTA supposed to be that actual model in the first place?
Yeah. So I think for me is, I also reflect, or for us, you know, from Ntiso Consulting point of view, reflect on the fact that we in the budget did not hear anything to do with the district development model.
Yes.
You know, so is it still, well, COCTA, from what we understand and what we see, is a model that they are driving. It makes sense. You need a melting pot, or at least a central structure which is going to coordinate. And the structure is closer to the ground than it is to the top. So the districts become a key mechanism of pulling together the funding. There's budgets allocated at provincial. Municipalities come up with their own budgets. There's private, you know, companies that want to come and invest, and all of that. So there should be that coordinating, if you want, nerve center, which looks at how do we align the fact that, you know, if we build a road, if a municipality budgets for 10 kilometers of the road, you have a JRA that budgets, you know, for another 24 kilometers, and you have, you know, and so on. And you get to a national road and you have the roads agency budgeting for another whatever. How do you then synchronize that aspect so that it doesn't happen in one financial year for the municipality, province comes in next year, and so on. So the synchronization, that's why, I mean, the word collaboration perhaps, you know, is sounds simpler, but there's a synchronization of efforts, synchronization of funding, synchronization of planning in essence, which will help unlock local government.
Because what we've noticed as well, for instance, when you look at what the ANC speaks about, the spatial apartheid planning, for instance, and then the debate then becomes that, so at a national level, this is something that the national government wants to do. They want to make sure that they break down this apartheid spatial planning. However, though, at a municipal level, they've got a different formula in how they go about allocating land, for instance. And I know you made the example of traditional leaders, but even from a municipal level, is breaking the apartheid spatial planning part of, for instance, the Democratic Alliance's policy? I don't know whether it is. And would the Democratic Alliance agree to have low-cost houses being built I don't know what is the most expensive area in Pretoria, in Tshwane, for instance, and say that this land next to this most expensive residential area, we are allocating this for low-cost housing.
I think that's where, to broaden the debate as well, if you look at the whole social housing policy or legislation in terms of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, there's social housing that must be made available, and particularly for a group of people who cannot afford funding from banks. So they would want to be accommodated, you know, there. There's also the RDP side, which is what we've known as the RDP side, which is also another form of residential housing for the greater majority of people. So there's talk of mega projects that will be coming up, and those mega projects are typically mixed use developments. So, so you can see
the smart
that,
city,
and the smart city
of Lanseria,
the smart city of Lanseria as well. So I think if you look at, you know, the planning, it calls into question the planning mechanism, because on the one side you want to plan for social housing, on the other side you're also planning for your lower cost housing, on the other side you want to plan for roads and so on. So I think the system of planning. And of course, you know, I can appreciate, you know, how planning used to be done, but really there needs to be a new way of, you know, how do you plan? Because the planning in the democratic area must be one that looks at, you know, how do you catalyze an area as instead of, you know, killing the industries. We talk about, you know, the sunrise industries as well. How do you plan so that you can also have the sunrise industries? We've got mine dumps, you know, around Gauteng, for instance, and some of the places in Northwest mining is declining and so on. So there's a new planning system. And part of it is possibly what the National Planning Commission should be looking at. There's ample stats that we are looking at from Stats SA of how the development is going. There's urbanization that is happening. I think if you want to then plan for a development that accommodates a lot of people, is that people are urbanizing. They are consistently looking for opportunities to move into the towns. So then issues of densification of how you accommodate people, transportation as well. So transportation patterns are going to change as well. So there's a bigger planning system of government which is happening in isolation. And I'm told that once upon a time, there would be a central body that would look at how do we plan for the country as opposed to I plan for transport, I plan for energy, I plan for that. But it needs to come together into one. And local governments is always at the receiving end of all of, whether it's lack of planning or disjointed planning, or lack of synchronization, or lack of skills, and so on. So it always comes to that. And of course, in the budget, there's about 420 odd billion, which is being released for infrastructure. And that's one fund that we must look at, because always we've been talking about the jobs funds, we've been talking about the infrastructure funds. And how do you get to a point where that amount of money becomes something on the ground, which is economic infrastructure, which can contribute to the generation of revenue and catalyzing of areas and sunrise industries within local government.
So we're going to go to Power News headlines. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM at 987. We'll also be speaking to Kevin Allen from the Municipal IQ, who is the managing director.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
And you can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and tweet at Power FM 987. Let's take this call from Tebe quickly. Good morning, Tebe.
Hey, thanks, Adrian. How are you?
Good.
Thanks. Just a quick one. I kind of fully agree with you on this issue of skill, especially on the political side. Mind you that at the municipal level, you have the administration level, which is the one Nelani is talking about, whereby I'm coming from the low-level municipalities in Matatu in Eastern Cape.
Okay.
In most of the Cape time, especially our political leadership, they put more emphasis on administration, rightful so. There's no question about it. But from my experience, I've realized that the oversight on the political side is really lacking a lot. You'll find a person who's a MMC looks after the finance, it has got a metric, it never been exposed, it has to go through tons and tons of financial statements and different financial planning reports and things of that one. And most of the time, they they lack the analytical skill of analyzing all the all this critical documentation. Mind you, the political side are the ones who are at the community level, and they take whatever the administration gives them, whether it's right or wrong. Hence, at the time, you'll find there's a breakdown of a planning of whatever projects which need to be executed. So I'll make one typical example. You take Joburg. The MMCs in Joburg and so on and so on, or before that time, they were the guys who had qualifications, and you could see the guys, they actually bring up the critical knowledge, the know-how of all what is being presented to them. And you go to lower level municipalities, your oversight level, it's a person who's just have a matric level and expect them to critique a very complicated documentation.
Yeah.
So really, something which they need to be looked into.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Let's bring into the conversation Kevin Allen, who is the Managing Director of Municipal IQ. Good morning, Kevin, and welcome to Power Talk.
Morning, Eldrin. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Just listening into that call that we received now, where do you think that disconnect is?
Sorry, I didn't hear clearly the disconnect. In what sense?
The disconnect in terms of the people who have all the critical skills who must be able to dissect documents and make sure that service delivery actually happened, but at a municipal level.
Yeah, look, it's a big question, and I think it's a question that all of us living in municipalities can validly ask now. I think let's just take a step back and say that in local government, I mean, it's very clear, you know, there is a big capacity issue. The capacity issue is felt most clearly in smaller, more rural municipalities. So our municipality specifically, and most especially in the Eastern Cape and KZN, where there's less capacity. And, you know, what we find is that there's quite a clear link or quite a clear correlation between the performance of a municipality and the capacity of the administrators and the politicians in those municipalities. But another issue that we've got to remember, and that is also becoming more and more incumbent on us as ratepayers and as people who live in municipalities, as of course all of us do, to remember, is that there's another element to the capacity issue, and that is the capacity and oversight of local politicians, in other words, our local councillors. And they have an absolutely key role. And often what we find in municipalities that are failing, and what we know at Municipal IQ, and in Municipal IQ we monitor the performance of municipalities on an ongoing basis, we know the municipalities that are doing the worst are the municipalities, the smaller municipalities, especially in rural provinces and rural areas of provinces. And, you know, it's very unfair, but what you will find is in those places, capacity is very low, as I said, but also oversight is very poor. So, you know, we need to get to a situation where local councillors also do their job well. In our larger cities, you know, people often complain about large cities, and certainly they're not perfect. I mean, we have a lot of politics and issues in places like Tshwane and Johannesburg at the moment, and one would think that these things could be cleared up in a more reasonable fashion, but, you know, that's how politics is. But these municipalities are reasonably well run, and we see that again at Municipal IQ. We see their performance, their ability to get the job done, their levels of expenditure per resident are significantly higher than smaller municipalities. But that's not least because the capacity of councillors to perform oversight is very good. And you'll often find that. You'll often see where there's good oversight, where the you know, the guys who are actually in charge are the councillors, the mayors, speakers, the councillors, the head of committees that are in charge of infrastructure, etc. And when they're doing their job well, then administrators do their job well as well. But in many of our smaller municipalities, councillors don't do their job well. And that's also, unfortunately, when you have issues of corruption entering into the equation. So in municipalities where corruption is has become evident, a good case study is VBS, you'll see that oversight amongst councillors was very poor. In fact, in many of those cases, what's often linked to that as well is not only is oversight poor, but there's lots of allegations of corruption, in fact, against those very people who should be carrying out oversight. And that's in some municipalities, we can actually see that that's when a collapse occurs in those municipalities. Collapse of service delivery, collapse of basic functioning in those municipalities.
Mielani, on that particular aspect that Kevin is now bringing into the conversation, corruption and how you deal with that, because there's also the perception of corruption, which is quite detrimental.
I think if you look at, in very simple terms, I think the word corruption, or the way that we describe corruption, it can be a number of different activities within the municipality. But what we always are looking at is, how was the governance of the process that was instituted to carry out, a procurement of a particular service? So there are always those committees that are supposed to be playing a role. If you look at the procurement side, there's the bid specification committees, there's the evaluations, there's the adjudication committees, and ultimately the accounting officer as the person that must sign off whatever the work is. So the oversight within those structures is important. We also look at, or at least consider, other committees such as the municipal public accounts committees, which is an equivalent of SCOPA, which should also be very active with respect to monitoring as well as looking at compliance and bringing various people to book within there. So it is quite important that those Section 79 committees within the municipalities are also active, and their activity would be to interrogate each and every project or each and every plan or each and every idea or initiative that comes through. So there's a greater layer to it, as opposed to looking at, for instance, just a single councillor at a ward who's looking for a footbridge. There's a process behind it which must be followed to the letter, and there are committees which and skilled people and processes that should be followed to curb the corruption there. So it is possible as well to curb the corruption, because the issue here is, if you are waiting for someone who has the skills and you constantly see a particular advert being advertised, cancelled, advertised, cancelled, and so on, those are telltale signs that there could be something which is amiss, and that's where the various people that are charged with that responsibility can be looking at how they curb something like that. There's also a procurement plan which must be followed, and that procurement plan has timelines, because if you want to spend the budget within the current financial year, and if your expenditure is low, it's a good sign as well for the oversight committees to be able to raise an alarm to push for the procurement to happen and the expenditure to happen and to go in the right areas of within the municipality. So corruption in this case is one that, yes, we're dealing with, and the perception at times of that corruption is one that is more damaging at times than the reality.
And also, Kevin, I'll get your opinion on this now. But Mielani, just quickly, on Kevin mentioned earlier on the VBS saga. And I remember a certain municipal manager whose municipality was also implicated, from Limpopo though. That person managed to leave the municipality when there were allegations leveled against him, and found another job as a municipal manager in a Gauteng municipality. So also, how do you make sure that you sift through and make sure that you get the best people for the job, but those who have been found to have been guilty of allegations of corruption, make sure that they don't manage to reinvent themselves in the governance structures?
A couple of things within there, and I think this is speaks volumes of the isolation. Whatever happens, you know, sometimes in Limpopo vis-a-vis in Gauteng, those are the affairs of, you know, Gauteng. Therefore, we don't know, you know, and we don't want to know. And I think the integration is quite important, because the integration, as well as looking at skills, there's only a finite pool of skills within local government, and people tend to move around within local government. So the question that we'd ask is there a central database, for instance, that knows that, you know, this person is a chief financial officer material, they've had their tenure at this place and that place and so on, and can you really look at their record as well to see
is
that, you know, how have they performed?
Is there one? Does it exist?
Well, informally, I have not seen one. So that means, you know, that's an opportunity that, you know, must or a gap that must be closed within that space to ensure that, you know, the crop of people who are coming into local government, there's at least, you know, something that tracks even their progress, not only to look at, you know, the non-compliance side, but to look at a pool of people who are eligible to be moving to the next, you know, position or closing that critical position within there. So that is something that, and we can point at, you know, various areas, but if you look at, you know, COCTA as well, or COCTA is quite important. National Treasury is also another body that does quite a lot with capacitating financial officers, particularly. And that's where such a list, or between COCTA and the National Treasury, there can be good collaboration to also track the movements of the various officials.
Okay.
So currently, the isolated or the nature of how local government is looked at across provinces and nationally, it's something that would gap must be closed.
Okay, Kevin.
So Treasury does have a corruption blacklisting tender database. I'm not sure how well that's maintained, but certainly that's something that is important. But the underlying issue here is that and what we need to, obviously it speaks about corruption in our society more generally, is that I think what most South Africans would like to see now is appetite amongst specifically politicians to address corruption across the board, including in local government. And, you know, in VBS, I mean, there's numerous examples in the VBS saga of politicians who are under pressure, who haven't been moved, politicians who have been moved and promoted, if you don't mind. I mean, can you believe that? Into provincial government. Now, this, I remember a very particular example in the Free State as well, a few years ago, of two politicians, local politicians, who were local councillors in Machabeng municipality, and then promoted, who were found to be corrupt, convicted of corruption, and then the next minute they were MECs in the provincial government. I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, what we need to do, what we need to see here, as we need in all spheres of government, is to see commitment from our politicians at a provincial, in this case, provincial and local level, those who are role players in local government, actually getting involved in this and saying, listen, you know, you've been implicated in the VBS saga. Okay, the person hasn't been found guilty, but let's maybe ask that person to step back. Let's not put the message out that, you know, if you are... if there's very clear allegations of corruption in something like VBS, this enormous, absolutely scandalous affair, then let's maybe show that we're committed to not supporting that kind of behavior or those individual people. So we need to see more of that. I would like, certainly for myself, to see in this particular case, the ANC in Limpopo, because we're talking about very, very specific ANC role players here. I'd like to see the ANC acting more decisively in terms of that, Northwest as well, Gauteng as well. And I think it would be good. I think it would be good to show, you know, we've heard at a national level specifically, our president and other national role players, ministers, etc., talking about a drive to get rid of corruption.
Yeah.
And I think we need to see this followed through in local government. Provincial government has a specific role to play because it bears oversight responsibility for the regulation of local government. So certainly, I think we need to see that. And I think also at a local level, we need to see in local branches of political parties, not only the ANC, also the Democratic Alliance, and Carter Freedom Party, other parties. This isn't a one-party issue, but we need to see parties acting decisively against cadres at a local level. So if a councillor is implicated in corrupt activity, we need to see this councillor being removed and that councillor stepping back and somebody else being put in their place. And hand in hand with that, the issue ultimately for me is about accountability and performance, because as I said earlier, all these issues are related: corruption, lack of performance, lack of accountability, lack of governance oversight. All these things, all these negative issues result in this negative downward spiral, and they all need to be addressed at once. For me, I think the factor that unites it all is accountability. Accountability is the issue. We need to have local councillors who are accountable. We need to have local officials who are accountable, and accountable to us as people, residents in these municipalities. When you have very poor accountability, that's when you have low performance, and that's when you have low capacity, which just carries on and on in a municipality. You have, revenue rates which have gone through the floor. Municipality is not collecting adequate levels of revenue. Its revenue rates have dropped by maybe 20% a year over a five-year period. It's clearly indicating collapse in that municipality, but nothing happens. The administrators are left in place. Councillors are left in place. Nobody is held accountable.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that point, Kevin Allen, the Municipal IQ Managing Director. When we come back, we just want to touch quickly on aspects that are actually working in local government and how we can ensure that local government actually builds on that to make sure that there is more revenue made available, as Kevin just touched on that as well, and also making sure that there is, what did you call it again earlier on, Mielani? Not really profitability, but
surpluses that municipalities must generate.
Just after this. Yeah.
For more, visit power987.co.za.
Tweet Eldrin at Eldrin Sampier.
It is 5 minutes to the top of the hour. 11 o'clock. When we come back after Power News, we will be having a conversation around the public sector wage bill, which would be cut by 160 billion rand over the next 3 years. And COSATU is saying that this is a declaration of war. But in the meantime, we're still in conversation with Mielani Holeni, who is Group Chief Advisor for Revenue at Inkiso Consulting Group. Mielani, you were speaking earlier on about the maturity report that you were busy with.
Yeah, so for the third year running from Inkiso Consulting point of view, we've really looked at how do municipalities mature beyond the kind of formative stages of where they are with getting the revenue right, with getting the planning correct, the service delivery. So one of the key things that we've done is to look at revenue, because as I said earlier, revenue is core. If you're able to generate your own revenue, you're able to then fund various things. You're able to attract the skills which would be able to carry out the various programs, to do the thinking and the implementation. So we've really come up with, five archetypes of municipalities. There's one that obviously is a lagging municipality, is grant dependent. There are other ones which are emerging municipalities, slightly a bit, out of the grant, system, but trying to do their own things. Municipalities that are developing are most overwhelming, because secondary cities such as your Rustenburgs, your Bulukwanis, your Mbombelas, and they are showing a lot more promise. If you look at how Mbombela has started to pull itself out of the difficulties that they were in of a deep financial crisis, and you also get municipalities that are optimizing. And those municipalities, for instance, look at how they get alternative sources of funding, and the big ones, which is mainly the cities, are the ones that would deal with the greater programs of waste to energy and greater things. So there are aspects within municipalities that we need to look at, which are functioning, but core to it is you need to get money into the system. And that money is the one that makes that municipality attractive. But also broadly, looking at the local economic development side of things, of sunrise economies, of tourism, of looking at, you know, now, you know, the minister spoke of cannabis. That cannabis, you know, that's a real industry that, you know, can at a local level developed and so on. So there are those municipalities that are coming up, and we ought to look at that, because all they need is infrastructure and funding to get the infrastructure going, to get the water losses, you know, sorted, and electricity losses sorted.
When it comes to big projects and investments, like the president had the investment drive last year and the investment summit last year, do municipalities have a mechanism or a forum where they actually bid and say that this particular company that wants to invest in South Africa, we have the perfect municipality where this company would actually be benefiting more out of setting the company up here compared to setting your company up in Johannesburg, where the property rates are much higher?
The cities have tended to do a lot better in that aspect. The likes of Ekurhuleni, for instance, the like of Tshwane with the automotive industry, the like Ekurhuleni, there's also the breweries that are coming up within there, the COJs. Often what we've also seen is that sometimes they leave it until a bit too late, where there's red tape. So the issue of red tape is one that, to make a municipality more attractive, is to remove, for instance, the multiple layers of approvals that must be carried out. We've seen one of the municipalities auctioning land so that investors can come and buy the land, you know, quickly without having to follow lengthy processes of red tape and so on. So municipalities can improve in that area. It's one area of maturity or lack of maturity that we've pointed out, because there are just simply too many processes. Yes, we must comply with legislation, but fast-tracking all of that to the point where you can get an investor to sign within 30 days of having landed, you know, in the country, or having pitched an opportunity, not 3 years later, because 3 years later, you know, there are too many things that change. Time value of money, opportunities dwindle, other areas become more attractive. So from a municipality point of view, and those are the optimizing municipalities that we are talking about, those are the ones that are starting to simplify the promises, the processes, and getting investors. So thinking about investors as opposed to just thinking about processes only.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was Mielani Holeni, who is the Group Chief Advisor for Revenue at Indiso Consulting Group.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.